Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another episode of Hashtag My Investing Story. Hi, my name is Ann McNeil, and I am the Master Wealth Builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And I'm very excited today, just like always, to be talking about Better Investing, which is a not-for-profit 501c3 organization, better known as the National Association of Investors. And the organization was formed in 1951 and has helped over 5 million individual investors find a financial future, which is freeing. But tonight, we're here to talk to another special guest about her investing story. And she just happens to be a very special guest to many of us, better known as Shelly Ransom. And to give her bio justice, Shelly, I'm going to read it the way it's written because, you know, I could go off script and talk about I could talk about Shelly Ransom for a very long time because Shelly Ransom is the managing member of Benchmark Construction Consulting and Management, which is an LLC. She has over 20 years of experience as a Florida certified general contractor and the distinct honor of being the first African-American woman certified building official in the state of Florida. Ms. Ransom Jackson utilizes her practical construction knowledge that has enhanced over 17 years of public administration experience to assist clients navigating the bureaucracy associated with development. And Ms. Ransom is also past president of our National Association for Black Investment Club. She has been our treasurer. And right now, currently, she's actually our vice president of our Debt Investing Investment Club. And so with that, welcome to the show, Shelly, and evening, Ione. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
So we're excited to talk to you, Shelly, because I know as we were closing out last year, we were at a dinner together, and you were talking to me about how you use your Charles Schwab account to do research to correlate it with the SSGs that you do. So before we get into that part of your story, we do want to start with your first experiences of money. If you can tell us when you even started to learn about investing. A lot of times people are not taught investing at home. So we just kind of want to hear from you, what were those early experiences with money, and then at what age did you find out about investing?
So it's funny you start there. My early experiences with money or just investing was really through my mother, and it was real estate, not necessarily currency. And so she used to buy properties. We built homes, rented them out or sold them. So that was, and I was right there laying block right along with her. And it was sort of like a family thing where we would just build a house. But coming from the roots of having, from the Bahamas, my mother was actually born in the Bahamas. And the one thing that about Bahamians is they know how to save money. They say, you know, the philosophy is you get paid, pay yourself first. Well, no, pay God first, then pay yourself. And so that was the philosophy that I had grown up with. In terms of you know, really learning about investing, primarily stocks, that actually has only been recent, and it's really been since for the past 5 years that when through MABWIC in, Education Committee that established the investment club under Ann's tutelage, that's really when I started really to the stocks in investing using the Better Investing Principles.
Wow, that's a really good start. I want to actually ask more details, and if you could give us more color about your childhood, because we do have guests that our parents and our grandparents, and many times the question is, how do I teach my child about this? And of course, the very first thing that I think we overlook is our lived behavior is the first teacher. So with your mom buying land, buying homes, fixing them up, renting them out, and selling them, was the pay yourself second to God verbally stated to you, or did you watch her handle money and actually put aside money in an envelope for tithes and an envelope for her? What were some of the specific things that you probably observed from your mom to help you learn those lessons?
Actually, it was my mom and my grandmother. And yes, it was the whole envelope. But it was also said, it was not said once or twice. It was repeatedly, you know, that, hey, when you make your money, you put your money aside. You set aside something. Give God his 10%. So there was a tithing envelope. There was a grocery store envelope. There was an envelope for pretty much everything. And so that was what I saw. That was what my grandmother did. That's what my mother did. Of course, like I said, back then, everything, they said land was king. So the money that you're putting aside, it goes to buy property. And that was where the investments were. The investments were property. Now, I didn't have as much experience or see with the in regards to stocks, but I do know that my dad, who worked for FPL, he had stocks shares of FPL, and so I do recall from early him talking about his FPL stock. And of course, my mom, because she was his semi, like an entrepreneur, pretty much, where she ran
you
a
are
program,
muted.
And then again, the funds from that, the salary she made from that, running that program, I saw her put away funds. Now, I will tell you this, you say you want color, I'm just going to be completely transparent. My mom used to spend a lot of money. And so I saw the spending part of it, which was the most intriguing to me. So for the longest time, I would just spend money, not put away as much as I should or could. I would spend more of my time, you know, buying the things that I want. But then she would pull me back in and say, hey, this is not what, you know, the way you were taught. And so I, again, started every once in a while when I would go off track, she would just bring me back on and say, hey, don't forget, pay yourself first. Invest your money. And her, like I said, her primary thing was investing in real estate. So that's really what I saw growing up, is my dad having stocks and my mom investing in real estate. She bought property throughout the state, and when she and between buying property, investing in property, she also had a savings account. So as a matter of fact, we all had savings accounts. That's one of the things she took us to home savings. It was a savings amount back when they had savings and loans banks. She took us to the one right there in Carroll City, right off of 27th Avenue and 183rd Street, next to the flea market. There was a savings and loan, and that's where we opened. That's where she opened up our first bank account. And that was the time when they had a passbook. You know, the people who are my age, they know about their passbook, right, Ann? So we had a passbook, and she gave it to us. She said, "This is yours." And she said, "Look at it," and she would put the money in there. So that was my first foray into saving, is just getting that passbook account and looking at the funds, you know, the money grow.
Excellent. Thank you for that color, because I think it is important to tell the whole story. You know, because growing up as kids, we observe so much, you know, from our parents. We observe them paying bills. We observe them stressing about bills. We observe them emotionally going through highs and lows regarding money. And like you said, we also observe when things are said once or twice, or when things are repeatedly you know, kind of programmed into us and said often. I know you mentioned that, you know, your mom kind of pulled you aside when you were spending a lot of money and probably weren't saving. Were you still a kid? Were you in your teenage years? Talk about that, and then what did you do when you had your first job? What were your, you know, your money habits then?
It was probably in my early 20s because I moved out at the age of 19. I moved out of the house, got my own apartment, and had been on my, you know, I've pretty much been on my own since then. But because at the age of 19 back then, I think I was making like $23,000 a year. Well, somebody fresh out of college, that was a lot of money. It afforded me to move out and I got a little car and so I was just, as far as I was concerned, I was balling. so she pulled me to the side, and she's like, "Nope, this is not, you know, first of all, like I said, it's not what you were taught." And and that first job, though, the first real job, because I had been working since 14, but the first real job, which was that one, working for Carnival, Crystal Palace, I struggled. Honestly, I really struggled to save, because there was so much, again, having that amount of money going through my hands, I struggled to save. Especially when I had had rent to pay, I had, because no one was helping me at that point. So I really had to really pull back onto my childhood experiences to say, okay, let me at least, if I could save $10 out of the check, just to save a little bit of something. You know, because my mom had no problem asking me, "Have you saved anything?" You know, oh yeah, she would ask, "What does your bank account look like? Have you saved anything?" And of course, that's when she taught me, don't get all those credit cards, right? So that was really my whole thing. And of course, I didn't listen, because I got credit cards and ran up the credit. And and then I was like, okay, mom, she said, the same money you save, pay the credit card bill. Which, oh yeah, she wasn't joking. She was like, the money you save, now you ran up the bill and you have to pay. And so that taught me that at a minimum, I need to save something, and in terms of managing my money better. But it was a challenge. It was a, I mean, a serious, serious challenge. Like I said, at 19, on your own, and you have money, discretionary money to spend after paying your bills. It was a time, but I thank God I lived through it and got better at it. And honestly, you know, I'm still some habits are hard to die. When you become more conscious of it, then, you know, like I say, you know better, you do better.
Exactly. You know, hearing about your mom, I'm going to say having a plan. You know, I've never met her, but just from what you told me, it seemed like she had a plan. And the plan was make money, save money, invest money the best way I know how, which is in real estate. I found that it's really hard to save when you don't know what you're saving for. That's why spending is so exciting, because you get something at the end. You know, I'm exchanging this money for this item, shoes, clothes, trip, whatever it is. I found it very hard to save if I didn't know what I was saving for. And I think, you know, some teens save up for a car, mm-hmm. or they save up for something, and that's, you know, the one of the best ways or motivators or focal points to get you to save. Talk to us about either the system that you had to put in place when you started that savings habit, and also talk about how that habit, that, you know, having a savings habit changed other things for you. Because I do think sometimes it is about discipline, and sometimes we have to get disciplined about one thing and then it can positively impact other things.
So initially, actually, and this came a little later, I read Dave Ramsey. And so I started with the envelopes and the snowball, paying off things, you know, with the snowball effect.
How long ago? 10 years ago? 15?
About 15 years ago.
Okay.
And he, you know, you're right. You have to know your why. And that goes with anything that you're going to do, is you need to know why. And when you're, you know, at 19, I didn't have a why. Why, you know, I didn't, there was no necessity. There was nothing I needed or wanted that I couldn't get from my. So I really had not had that why. After I had my daughter at 25, as a single mom, that gave me a why. That forced me to have a why. So, and that is really when I started taking, you know, trying to save money a lot more serious, because now it wasn't just me. I had someone else I needed to look after, to make sure that she had everything that she needed, because it was only me. And so that's when I started with the Dave Ramsey and reading and, you know, using his philosophy, and it worked. It definitely worked. I was able to, you know, pay down some credit card debt and just different debt that I had accumulated and started building my emergency fund and things of that nature. But when I started that, it was good for me to do. And I started, you know, I would teach my daughter, and then I started couponing, or at least I attempted to coupon. It's just, my attention span is just not that long to sit there and cut out coupons. So I attempted to do that also in an effort to save, you know, because whatever money I was going to save by couponing, that's more money I could put up. So those are some of the things that I was doing early on like I said, up until I, about until 5 years ago with Maverick Invest. And that just opened up a whole other light.
Yeah, let's get there, because and thank you for walking us through, because so far you were taught some fundamental principles, you strayed away a little bit, you came back to it, you had a few wake-up calls like the credit card incident, then you found another system, which is the Dave Ramsey system, you started to implement that, and now you have been in an investment club, the National Association of Black Women in Construction Investment Club, for 5 years. Before we get into that, talk to us about how your perspective on money has changed from, you know, childhood being with your mom to being a single adult to then even being a single mother.
I value money more now than I ever did. And also being an entrepreneur. It's one thing to have a value for money when you're working for someone else. It's a whole different category of value of money or your perception of money when you're working for yourself. And that was literally like an epiphany for me, because I didn't realize that my focus and my thoughts about money would change so drastically, especially because I stopped really working for someone else for almost 5 years ago, actually. And yeah, in 2018. And so, and when I'm being full-time as an entrepreneur, a business owner, now my focus on money is just like, my focus is more saving more now than before. And as I save now, it's and my perspective changed, because now my focus is generational wealth. That's my why. So I went from learning from my mom and my grandmother primarily, throughout my teen and early 20s and even some of my 20s and early 30s, just trying to figure my way out in terms of my relationship with money. With my daughter, my relationship with money changed because now I had to take care of somebody else. But as I've gotten older and my station in life has changed, my relationship with money has changed as well, where now I'm just more focused. I am a lot more focused in terms of where my money goes, what I'm spending my money on, who I'm spending my money on, and all of that really comes into play now with me. So it's just a completely different mindset, and it comes with, growth, maturity and growth and just life circumstances.
Awesome. Let's probably get into an example of what that means, because I think sometimes people without a plan don't recognize how people with a plan operate. Right. And so I know for myself, every dollar generally already is tagged to a certain bucket, when it comes in. How would you have treated $1,000 when you were single? How would you have treated $1,000, when you were a single mom? And then how do you treat $1,000 coming in now as an entrepreneur / stock investor?
So $1,000 when I was single, after paying my, because I always believe I had to have a roof over my head, food in my stomach, and a vehicle. So once I did that, I would venture to say at least 50%, maybe 5% went to saving something, and you know, I 50% went to my actual bill, and the other 45%, I was straight balling.
Having a good time.
I was having a blast. Okay, traveling. Listen, have passport. So, up until I had my daughter. When I had my daughter, then, you know, it was more of, all right, I don't have 45% of my $1,000, you know, to spend frivolously. So that dwindled down to probably about maybe 20%, I would, you know, of discretionary of that $1,000. And now, honestly, because I count every dollar and like you say, have those buckets where I know it needs to go, now $1,000, maybe 5%, if that, is discretionary. So my because I have a why, I you know, I have very definitive things that I know I need to do with that money. So it's allocated. I allocate what, you know, my allocations are very specific now because I have specific goals.
Excellent. We did have a quick question asking, I guess, with you being an entrepreneur, are you a solopreneur or do you have employees?
I have employees.
Okay. And we'll get to the building wealth question a little later. But before you even joined an investment club, when you were working, you know, before you became an entrepreneur, were you at all thinking about retirement and or contributing to a retirement account?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So working for the county and different municipalities. So I did, had my FRS. But then I also invested, had my deferred comp, 457. So I have as well as 401ks. So I always, and that's one thing from the time I started working, I always, got in whatever investment vehicle that employer had, I would always get it. That's what my mom, she was like, if they have an investment, anything you can invest in, you get into it, save your money because, you know, for retirement. So that's always been my focus.
Excellent. And can you remember what type of, how did you then invest the money inside of there? Because, you know, we do have a lot of guests that say, I signed up for it, but I didn't recognize that I was actually saving for retirement. I wasn't investing, or the money was sitting in the money market account. You know, so what were your investment choices at that time?
At that time, I distinctly remember was Vantage Point. And then what they would do is they would ask you, are you a, you know, do you take, would like to take risk? Are you moderate? Or, you know, a moderate risk taker, or a very big risk taker, or just, you know, you don't want any risk at all.
Conservative, right.
Right. So they want to, so then they would tell you or have a pie chart that would give you the percentage of the percentages for the types of stock that they would invest in for you. So if you were super conservative, then most of your money was going to be in, you know, the CDs and the money market, things
and
of that.
And baby bonds. Right.
And baby bond, right, the bond. But that's it. And then, but if you're a risk taker, you know, you're going to be, your money's going to be tied up in these large corporations. And it's scary. And I'll put it this way, it's not scary now. It was scary then. So I used to, but because I am I am not risk averse. I would always go with the median. I would go with the moderate risk. I'll take a moderate risk. I've never been conservative. I've never been super risky. But I am not risk averse. It's just that I took the moderate route because I'm like, okay, that's the safest. I don't mind losing a little bit, but I'm just not going to lose a whole lot. That was my philosophy. So that's how I started distributed how I had them invest my money.
You made an interesting point when you said you didn't know then what you know now. If you had the knowledge and the membership into Better Investing for 5 years, if you had that in your 20s and 30s, how would you have decided or chosen your investments inside of your retirement accounts?
I would have actually taken more ownership of them instead of letting the company dictate where my money went. Because then I would have been able to tell them where I want my money to go.
I think that's a beautiful response. I wasn't expecting it. No, but it's good because even with that response, a lot of times people don't realize they could take ownership of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so much that we don't know when we, number one, don't ask. And then, you know, as we start to learn about investing successfully and also for the long term, we then can go back into those same situations and start to ask more engaging, more productive questions to get us the results that we want.
I was going to say, unfortunately, we don't know what to ask. And that's the one thing that I can honestly say with Better Investing is now I know what to ask. If I'm speaking with a broker. You know, so it makes a difference in that. And honestly, it's with anything in life. You need to know what to ask, or you need to find somebody who can tell you what you need to ask.
I know there are going to be some people that, you know, are hearing this episode much later. If you have any questions off the top of your head about what would you ask a broker, or really even in this particular, what would you ask your retirement advisor at work? What would be some of those questions if you could go back in time and ask? What would some of those questions be?
One of the questions I would ask them is really to, it would just be more to explain explain the difference between, it was right on the tip of my tongue. I had it right at the top.
Is it between risk profiles?
Right. Why is this more risky? Division, you know, or these allocations, that's what I want to say. Why are these allocations considered risky? Versus this one that is moderate versus, so what is the difference between the three? Because that's really never explained. They give you the percentages of allocation, but they never tell you why. Why are they like that? And even though you can see what they're made up of, so what's the difference between a bond and a money market versus a security versus what's an EFT? You know, what are all these things that you will see as you are engaging the broker or the company that's investing your money, the ICMA or one of those retirement vehicles, asking the question, what does this mean? And then that way you can really make a better, more comprehensive decision when they start explaining what those allocations mean. What is the difference between a Vantage Point RC versus a Vantage Point MA? you know, and what's the difference between all of these different funds that you all are putting in front of my face? Because I, you know, and so those are some of the questions if you are working for someone, and even if you're not, you're working for yourself and you want to get a step IRA, you know, a self-employment account, retirement account.
Right.
You still need to know what you're investing in. So you still have to ask those questions. What does this mean? What is the, you know, what are the risk factors? What do you all look at? How are you picking the stock, choosing the stock that you're recommend, that you're putting my money in? You know, what is your criteria? Because one thing I found is everybody has a criteria for stock selection. Everybody. Charles Schwab has one. Better Investing has criteria. All of these different vehicles have different criteria in terms of investing. So you need to ask these questions. What are you investing my money in and why?
I love that. I think that is, even if you're not yet a member of Better Investing and you can become a member by trying our 90-day free trial on the betterinvesting.org website, even if you're not yet a Better Investing member, that is the one question that can fill up the rest of the time, you know, and I'm going to warn people that when they do set that appointment, with their retirement specialist at work or even the broker you've hired or even a financial advisor that you've hired to invest on your behalf, I would say take notes. Based on whatever they're telling you, take notes. And it's okay if you hear what they're saying and you also recognize that they may not know what they're talking about. And I have to say that because the reality of it is these people are also employees and they are reading the script that was given to them. And just because they work there does not mean that they actually know the answers. And I have encountered, you know, some people that have worked at different financial institutions. And instead of saying, I don't know, and instead of saying, let me go check with my manager, they actually err on the side of what you can look up called white coat syndrome. You know, it's no different than when you go to the doctor and just because they're the doctor, you know, they're going to assume that you're going to believe everything that, you know, they say. And so I would say in your path to learning more about investing and taking more ownership, in the words of Shelley Ransom, of your financial future, be willing to ask questions, be willing to be skeptical, be willing to be critical, be willing to be contrary so that you really, you know, look at all the different sides or at least many of the sides. Because it really, at the end of the day, it's your money, it's your future, it's your lifestyle. And I think that within our own network, people at church, people at work, you've seen enough people that just magically think that they're going to turn 65 and be given all the money they need to live a lavish lifestyle in retirement. And yeah, it don't work like that. It doesn't work like that. So Shelley, we have another question. Going back to your previous response about right now where you are being a business owner, an entrepreneur, an investor personally and within an investment club, you talked about your mindset being focused on leaving a legacy and building wealth. What specifically does that look like for you? Is it certain accounts? You know, is it a retirement account? Is it a 529 account? Is it specialized giving to certain nonprofits and organizations that align with, you know, your vision? You know, what does that leaving a legacy specifically look like for you?
So I have, my daughter has two girls, and they are my legacy. And that looks like for them, I have 529 that I've invested, you know, every month. And right now they're 5 and 3. And I've you know, started it probably a couple years ago. And so that they can have something. But when they graduate, you know, or go to college. But outside of that, I also have my investment vehicle with the SEP IRA for the self-employed IRA account, and of course my personal investing. So that's, and as I and I do give charitably to you know, right, I serve on the advisory committee for the Salvation Army of Miami, the advisory board. So I, of course, donate to them as well as other charities in the name of the business, because the business will carry on beyond me, and my, you know, for my it's, so I'm building it for my grandkids and their children and their children. I also invest in I have life insurance, using that as a vehicle for investment to start creating that wealth. I'm actually in the process of putting together putting everything in a trust and putting everything in a trust account, so that it's all protected, again, generationally.
Excellent. You know, you brought up so many different things, and I don't want to take for granted how we come across this stuff. You know, you came from knowing about saving and knowing about investing in real estate to learning about how to become an entrepreneur, learning about investing and joining an investment club, learning about plant giving in a way that is tax advantage and economically feasible, and even learning about a trust. How did you specifically learn about these things, to the ideas and the thinking around creating this type of life? Were there newspaper articles, the business section of the Miami Herald that you're reading? You know, is it the Better Investing magazine that you're, how do you think that, what specifically helped inform the growth path that you've been on, you know, for the past 5 to 10 years, 15 years?
Actually, it's really been only the last, really, honestly, the last probably 6 years that it was this transition. It was actually right after my mother passed in 2016, and I ended up joining NABWIC, and I started engaging in the McNeil factor. And part of that McNeil factor is the your 10 areas of
your life
to create life balance. And that was really where all of it came together. So what happened was the knowledge that I gained, you know, growing up, then that those 10 factors put all of it together. It just brought everything in together, and so it had me looking, even though it's funny, I knew each thing as an individual component. Everything was an individual component until I filled out that survey of through the McNeil factor of those 10 areas of your life. That brought everything together. So now it started what I call global thinking.
Amazing.
As opposed to, instead of that linear thinking, it brings that global thinking, thought process.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. After you took the survey, did it open your eyes to what was missing and then kind of put you on a path to fill in the gaps?
Yes. And it's funny because, you know, when you're going along life and you really don't know any better, you just think everything is great, you know, because you don't know what you don't know. But when it's laid out in front of you in black and white and you have to answer these questions honestly, it's like, whoa, I'm lacking in a whole lot of areas. And so it forces you to take that look at yourself, look at your life, and work on the areas that you find yourself deficient. And it forces you to do more research in how do I get better in these areas that I'm deficient. And so it just, like I said, it opens your mind to endless thoughts and possibilities as to where you can go and who you can be and what you can do.
Amazing. I'm glad you brought that up because that definitely ties into my next question, which is now that you are operating with this global thinking perspective, what are your life, but more specifically your financial goals for the future? So I know that growing your business and making sure that it's structured in a way that it can be passed down to your biological generations. But what are some other financial goals that you plan to achieve, whether 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 years? Because I think, you know, going back to the whole, it's hard to save if you don't have, you know, a plan or a goal, or what are you saving for? So in a sense, what are you investing for? What kind of financial future would you like to live? What are you investing for?
I'm investing for the future of all, actually, so I do have 2 biological and I have 5 non-biological. So I have 7 grandkids.
Right.
This is honestly for all of them, not just the 2. This really is for all of them. And that's what I'm investing for. I'm investing for their future, for their growth. I'm investing for their education. I'm investing for the growth, again, like you said, the growth of the company. And because I see the company as a global organization, not just domestic. So that's where my mind is right now. It's on the larger platform. And I want to be able to impact people's lives daily. So that's why I'm investing. That's why I'm growing what God has blessed me with, because he blessed me with it to be a blessing to others. And that is my philosophy. And I have a kingdom-driven business, and that is what I do. And so that's my why. My why is to impact people on a global level I term myself as a marketplace minister. The marketplace is my ministry in terms of bringing people into knowing and about Christ and his salvation. And that's really where I am at this point. It's just making sure that I impact and have leave a positive impact on this world one person at a time.
Excellent. So going back to an earlier question, just for some more specificity, after you know took the survey and recognized some gaps in things you should be considering for a well-rounded life, how did you go about filling those gaps? Is it books? Is it joining organizations? Is it talking to people in that field? How did you go about, and how do you continue to go about learning, you know, visual learning, audio learning? Because I think it's important to share with people the options that are out there.
So I'm one of those lifelong learners. I'm a researcher at heart. And so as I look at each component, I love Dr. Professor Google. Professor Google is the best teacher you could ever have. And that's what I started doing. I started Googling. And then as I'm Googling, I'm like, okay, so I find this out. And then if I see, well, who may be a expert, if you will, in this field, and I'll go talk to, and I'll make a phone call to a stranger and say, hey, you know, I ran across your name and this. Could you tell me a little bit more about it? And just anything, whether it's books, and I do like to read. So if it's a subject matter that I say, okay, this is interesting, let me learn more about this, I'll look on Amazon and I'll order books. I have a lot of books, and that's what I do. I just research, I talk to people, and it's funny, that's something I've learned over the years, is that if you talk to people and ask them things you don't know, you'd be surprised with the information that you'll learn. And people are glad to share that information with you if you only ask. So I've learned to not assume or just sort of, you know, shrink back. Ask the question. Only thing they can tell you is either they'll either answer the question or they'll say, I don't know. And then you go ask somebody else. But it's all about being, and the biggest thing though that in going through everything is keeping my mind open to all possibilities, keeping my mind open to what I'm hearing, and keeping my mind open to learning more.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to pass it back to Miss Ann, and as I do want to plug some Better Investing events that are going to be coming up. Number one, not the closest, but one of the ones we like to promote way in advance, which is the Better Investing National Convention, which is going to be held June 23rd to the 26th in Dallas, Texas. So again, if you are interested in even finding out, like, what are the topics that are going to be discussed and presented on, you know, feel free to visit betterinvesting.org. And if you scroll down to upcoming events, you'll see the Better Investing 70th National Convention. The Georgia chapter has a model club meeting this Saturday. The South Florida chapter has we used to call it a CASA class, but we can name it an investment education class this Saturday. So feel free, again, to go on to betterinvesting.org, Georgia chapter or South Florida chapter, and you'll see on the local events tab the events that are coming up. And last but not least, if you are interested in learning more about Better Investing, feel free to sign up for the 90-day free trial, which is at betterinvesting.org. And if you scroll down to the bottom, you'll find the free 90-day trial.
All right, Ione, thank you so very much. Miss Shelley, I took a lot of notes. And one of the things that you said that was very encouraging and inspiring for me was the idea of having a money mindset and just really being money conscious. Another item you said, you know, ask. But of course, but I should have started with the McNeil factor. So, you know, that was a highlight for me. So thank you so very much. And people are chatting saying, well, what is the McNeil factor? So of course I put in the chat Ann McNeil www.shellyhoffman.com/coaching. You can get more information about that. But what I did want to ask you, though, is about the investment club. If you can share what motivated you to participate in the Maverick Investment Club, and if you think there has been a benefit over the last 5 years. I know we only have a couple of minutes left, but your thoughts, please, about the National Association of Black Association, Maverick Investment Club, your thoughts on what motivated you to get involved with that?
I wanted to be more focused with my money. I needed to be more focused with my money and more purposeful for my retirement because since I got started so late in terms of this investing and using the better investing principles in investment, I needed to play catch up. So that really has been my driving factor in the investment club. And honestly, I wouldn't trade it for the world. If I had to do it again, I'm glad I'm in it. But if it was something that was offered to me again, I'd do it again 110%. And I really enjoy the better investing. And I'm glad I joined better investing as opposed to another platform because of the education. The education is not, you know, for me has been a very, very, it's been very helpful, especially in my personal investing.
Wow. And so I'm assuming you're saying that has helped your personal portfolio. What about your business investing based upon what you're learning from the investment club?
So my business investing, same thing. I'm learning where to strategically place funding that will help the business grow over the years. So it's helping me in every area of my life.
Now, what about family? Do you by any chance involve your family in this investment education as a result?
I've started, you know, because the 5-year-old and the 3-year-old are still a little young to really, really understand the concept. But what I've done is my 5-year-old, I've bought her, I'm getting her own piggy bank because, you know, she's like, Gigi, my mommy gave me $3. I'm like, okay, so where's your bank? We have to put it in the bank. And she's like, I don't have one. I say, okay, Gigi's getting you a bank. All your money's going to go right in this bank. And she got $10 for Christmas, and she gave it to her granddaddy and told him to put it in her account. And what we do is every month they get the bank statement. And the same thing that my mom did with us showing us that passbook, now my daughter opens up their bank statement and shows her, this is how much money you have in the bank. This is what you're saving. So that's how we're engaging them at 3 and 5 to recognize that saving money is something that you have to do. It's just a part of you.
Yeah, I see Ioni's head is bobbing up and down, and I'm sure part of that is because she might be having flashbacks from that piggy bank experience we had as she was growing up. And we would literally take her to the bank to make her deposits. So I want to just remind all of our listeners that may have come on a little later that you have been listening to hashtag My Investing Story. And tonight we have been talking with none other than Ms. Shelly Ransom. And we actually happen to be in the same investment club called Maverick Invest, which is the National Association of Black Women in Construction. But Shelly Ransom Jackson is the managing member of Benchmark Construction and Consulting, which is a management firm, LLC. She has over 20 years of experience as a licensed general contractor, first African-American female building official, and so many things in her resume. But I would like to go ahead and wrap up to just say that one of the things, Shelly, that is just most most powerful and impactful for me is just your friendship. And you know, iron sharpens iron, and having you a part of our investment club and other organizations that we're in, you add such great value. So I know you've added great value to all of our listeners tonight. And I'm going to turn it back over to Ione in case she has any closing comments, and also if you have any closing remarks before we wrap up.
Shelly, I just want to say you were an amazing guest tonight. Thank you so much for really being willing to share in detail your experiences, because I think that the examples you use, the lessons learned that you shared, it really helped give some concrete examples or things to do for people listening and really just trying to get a grip on where to start. Because a lot of times what makes starting difficult is if we're the only person in our circle starting. And so thank you for sharing. And also, you know, just also on behalf of Better Investing, thank you for being a member and sharing the wealth of Better Investing, because that's really how we like to invest in other people's lives, which is plug them into information and resources, and especially people that can help them reach their goals. So thank you, Shelly.
And I want to thank both of you for having me. This is definitely, it's actually been more enlightening. This is enlightening for me as it was for both of you. And I thank you and I appreciate you.
All right. All right. We also want to thank all of you that have been chiming in and are sitting inside of the Zoom chat, because we're here for you. And every week we come on, we are inspired by your participation. So I don't want to get in trouble by calling all of your names, but I do want to just say thank you. And a special thank you to Mr. Aretha Dennis, which helps make the podcast possible. And every week, Marshall Pierre that comes on and shares the love. So we want to ask all of you, please remember to comment, like, and share the show. And Shelly, we're going to tag you on the show so your friends can hear your interview. But remember, please, everybody, comment, like, and share the show, but also subscribe. All right? And until next time, we'll see everybody. And remember to please plan to become a better investor. All right. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.